Hello, everyone. This is Jasmine C. Gordon, and welcome to MAV Academics. Today, we have a very special guest. We have Isabel Grayson. Say hello.
Hello.
Nice to be interviewing today. How's your day so far?
It was good. I just finished teaching a brilliant class, so I love my students. It was a really good class, and we were reading The Bluest Eye by Toni Morrison, and they just made the most incredible insights, and very proud of them.
Amazing. So tell us a little more about yourself. Like, what are you all about?
Well, everyone here calls me Izzy, I-Z-Z-Y, and you can probably tell from my accent that I'm from the South, and all my students think my accent is very funny. And so I grew up in the South, and I have two teenagers whom I adore, and a big fat English bulldog who's very naughty. And I have been working at Mercy for about 8 years now. And this was my number one choice, was Mercy. I got offered jobs at other colleges, and I visited the Dobbs Ferry campus, and I said, this is it. You know, I even loved taking the Metro North train because it's just so calming to look out the window. And I thought the campus was just beautiful. And, you know, before I took the job, I sat in on some classes, talked to students in the cafeteria, and I said, this is home. I really love it. Home away from the South, up in the North. I love teaching here, and I really love the community that has grown on the Manhattan campus. The Dobbs Ferry campus is a wonderful community, but this is brand new, you know, pretty new. And boy, the community just flourished almost instantly. And for me, the most important part of being a college educator, building community. And so that's been wonderful for me where, you know, the staff knows each other. The PACT mentors know the professors. All the professors here are great friends. We're good friends with our students. And the students are down in the common area and they're having fun. They're in the cafeteria. And that to me is, I think, my biggest theme in my teaching. And my biggest love is to create community. I think that once you have that sense of community, students want to come to class. It doesn't just become a commuter college where you get in and you get out. And I've taught through the CUNY schools, and that had a very commuter feel to it. And the students used to express frustration there, and they said, you know, we just come in, we don't know anybody. I didn't really know my peers, professor peers, and I thought that was really sad. And I have done some research where, you know, a way to create a very powerful retention where students come back to Mercy and they don't drop out is if they have that strong sense of community. So that really is the main theme that runs through all of my teaching. And that's what makes it fun. To work and to come to school.
I love that. Especially, I love the community part. That's what Mercy feels like. I feel like all the teachers that I've had, at least, they make sure that everybody in the class is okay. Everybody understands. Everybody's having a good time, at least. So it's not just them just speaking to us. Even during COVID, they were like, everybody okay? Like, how's everybody feeling? Like, check-ins and things like that. I love that. Can you tell us a little bit more about your educational background? How long have you been teaching?
Well, I've been in school forever. And I am sick of school, going to school. I'm never going to go back to school again. I went to NYU for undergrad, and then I went to the CUNY Graduate Center for my PhD, and I specialized in composition and rhetoric. And then I started working through the CUNY system at Hunter, at City College, at Brooklyn College, as a writing fellow, and as an adjunct language and literature instructor. And I also used to work at a bone marrow donor center.
Really?
While I was teaching at Hunter. So I would teach my classes in the morning, and then I would go to the bone marrow donor center, and I worked as a donor recruiter, which is trying to get people to take the cheek swab so that we can get a tissue type, and then we put that tissue type in the national data bank. And we run that type up against patients who are suffering from blood cancer to find a match. And once we found a match, then the patient then goes through a transplant of stem cells or bone marrow. And so at this point, I have had 26 patients go through transplant, and all of them are cancer-free.
Oh, congratulations.
So that was really, really important to me. But as you can imagine, it's a hard job because some patients do not make it. And some of those patients are children. And as my students know, I am a very emotional person. And so when they would get sick, it started to get to me. And I said, I belong in the classroom, you know. And so I applied to all different colleges and I chose Mercy. Mm-hmm. And I'm happy I did.
We're happy you did too. How long have you been teaching in general?
Gosh, let's see. I started a tutoring company when I graduated from NYU and hired a lot of tutors. We did pro bono work, but we also got some nice paychecks from that, and it was a thriving business. I felt that I belonged more in the classroom rather than one-on-one tutoring, and so that's why I went to get my PhD. And so I guess with tutoring and adjuncting and working at Mercy, I've been teaching for about 22 years.
Very nice.
And having babies through that too. Writing the dissertation with the baby on my lap, typing with one hand. So it's been a journey.
Nice. Impressive, impressive. You know, women always have to do that hard work, especially when we have kids.
Yes.
So what prompted you into teaching? What was the number one reason that made you think, I really love teaching?
My mother. She is the love of my life. Don't tell her that, but she'll use it against me. But she was my high school teacher. She taught me Latin. And I think that should be against the law, that your own mother teaches you. She would, you know, give me more homework than anybody else, and she'd get mad at me if I cut up in class. And anyway, she does know that she is the most brilliant educator I have ever experienced in my life. And I just saw the community that she created in the classroom, and these are, you know, she's teaching Latin to football players, and they, to this day, just went to a high school reunion, can say, they can conjugate amo, amas, amat, amamus, amatus, amant. They can still do it because of the way she taught. And it just, she just made it look so easy and so much fun. She was actually really having fun, and she loved us, even me when I was naughty, got grounded a lot. But she just filled her classroom, and this sounds really Hallmarky, but she did, with love of the language, with love of giving that language to other people and giving knowledge to other people, and she's funny. And so we really, it's ridiculous, but we enjoyed going to Latin class. Who likes Latin? It's a dead language. We loved it. So that's really where, you know, that gene, I got that gene from my mama. And you know, she encouraged me to teach. And, you know, my father is an ear, nose, and throat surgeon. So I'm also interested in medicine. And so I thought that I was going to go into medicine and be that kind of doctor, that kind of money-making doctor, instead of the hard work of PhD and the poverty. But I decided to go my mother's route into teaching. And I'm so glad that I did. And it's been so fulfilling for so many, all through the years. And, you know, it is a really strange feeling because I've had so many stupid jobs just to make money through college and waiting tables and been fired from them all because I'm just terrible at doing things I don't like to do. I've been fired from 12 jobs. I should not say that out loud. But I just didn't have any love for them. You know, I hated that. I worked in Arby's and fast food. I cleaned floors. I worked in a hotel. And I, you know, hated it. And, of course, got fired. And so this is the job where, I shouldn't say this, but I would do it for free. I love it that much.
I feel like a lot of the teachers here say the same thing. Yeah. They love Mercy. What's your position at Mercy? What do you do at Mercy? What's your courses that you teach?
I teach creative nonfiction, and then I teach the required English courses, English 110, 111, and 112. And I've taught short stories before. And, you know, throughout my work through the colleges, I've taught anything from Shakespeare to 19th century women's literature to Candide, Molière's Candide. I've taught French, Je parle français. And I've just, you know, it's made me really resourceful to teach so many different things, even though I'm really specialized in composition and creative nonfiction. I can pull from, you know, everything that I've taught in the past years.
Is there any one topic that you just love teaching over and over again that you don't get tired of teaching?
Creative nonfiction.
And why is that?
I mean, some of these students write better than I do. They have such rich backgrounds and so much to say. And it pleases me greatly to pull out that creativity, break the cliche ways of speaking and writing, and help them find a very original, powerful way of telling their true stories. And we do create with my creative nonfiction, because we are telling true stories, we really create an intimate learning environment filled with trust and filled with, here comes the hallmark again, but really with a lot of respect and love for each other. As cheesy as that sounds, but it really is true. And it's so incredibly rewarding, it's powerful, and it's meaningful to me to know people's stories. And it's an honor for students to be able to trust each other in my classroom and to trust me.
One of my favorite subjects is English. Like, English is a really, I love writing, I love reading. And teachers like you, professors like you, that when you come into your class, it feels like, you know, you're home. You can go outside of your comfort zone when writing and things like that. I love teachers like that because they get you to write in different ways, not just one of the ways that you're used to, you know, get you outside of the box.
There's so much hatred for writing. And so I began my classes, the first day of class, asking everybody, how many people like to write? And I said, be honest. You know, you don't need to be a sycophant here, right? Just be honest, be totally honest. Do you think it sucks? Do you hate it? Just let me have it. And most hands go up that they can't stand it. And then I asked them why. And they say it's hard. And I said, well, do you like doing something that you're not really good at, that you don't feel like you're really good at? They all say no. You know, I tell them I hate skiing, right? I fall down all over the place, and I hate it, and it's cold, and it's repetitive, and I'm bored, and I'm not good at it. So I don't like it. But I got good at it. I did. I still hate it, but I got really good at it. I don't hate it. And I started to have fun with it. And I used to feel the same way about writing. You have so many teachers telling you different things about your writing and bashing your confidence, right? So students haven't been taught to write well. So why would they like writing if they fear it? Because we fear what we don't know, and we fear what we're not good at. It makes you feel bad about yourself. And so the main thing that I try to do, first of all, is create a comfortable atmosphere to create that community so that people feel safe enough that they can make mistakes with their writing and feel safe enough to stop hating it and start realizing, wow, I'm not trembling with insecurity here, because nobody can write if you have that pressure. That's just like saying don't write anything because it's writer's block and there's too much pressure on it, which just staunches any kind of voice. And my students finally get comfortable with it. And at the end of the semester, I ask them again, do you like to write? Some still say, no, I hate it. But a lot of people say, yeah, I do. I got the hang of it. And that to me is really important, is to reduce the fear around writing. Because when you reduce the fear, you reduce that insecurity and you reduce the sheer hatred for it. And if taught well, you can reveal to students that once you practice and once you really, really keep doing it, you're going to learn how to write. It's not that hard.
I love that. You're rewiring their brain so they don't feel uncomfortable whenever they're writing, even if it's just a bunch of gibberish.
Yeah.
So why English? Why not any other subject? If you could choose a different subject, would you?
French.
French?
Oui.
Why French?
I lived in Paris for a year, and I studied at the Sorbonne. And because I studied Latin with my mama, I know grammar. And I really love teaching grammar. So what we do in my classes, we call it grammar boot camp. I mean, if you walk by one of my classes when we're learning grammar, people are screaming. I mean, they are drilling their conjunctions, right? They are drilling where to put a comma, where to put a semicolon. Do you put a comma in front of a for, and, nor, but, or, yet, so? If you walk down the hallway and say for, and, nor, but, or, yet, so, my students will say, Izzy, where's Izzy? They'll know because they've drilled it so many times. And that drilling, that boot camping, is the way I learned French and the way I learned Latin. And I taught at, I don't know if y'all know what this is, Berlitz, which is a language center. And they taught me the boot camp technique, which is you're drilling so fast that you don't have time to think. You're not translating French in your head. You're and as students are writing, it, you know, grammar becomes a native language after a while. They just know it. It's ingrained in their heads where to put a semicolon. You know, it's ingrained in their heads where to put a comma. It's ingrained in their heads not to start a sentence out with a but. And it just becomes more of a natural language rather than something they have to go and look up online on Al Perdue or MLA.
Are there any tips or recommendations you have for writing, for people that still might think, I don't really like writing? Like, do you have any tips to get their creative juices flowing?
Stop the fear. And I tell my students, I am not the disciplinarian. I treat you as adults. This is your class. This is your time to learn. And I'm not going to be that teacher with the big red grading pen like a sword hanging over your words. I'm just not going to be that person. I want you to be able to know that if you wrote one draft and it's not good, we'll rewrite it, right? You're constantly writing with a safety net. And once you reduce that insecurity and fear, it's like I said, the words start to come out like ice skating on the page. It is just incredible once you reduce that fear and you give students confidence. And they give themselves confidence because once the fear is reduced, they start liking what they're writing. And I always tell them this. If I can get you to have one singular sentence that sings, just one, then that's fabulous. And of course, I use alliteration there.
Do you have any professional achievements that you're really proud of?
I'm writing a book right now.
Tell
and
us
it's
more.
Called Faction, a sort of memoir. And it's a mixture of nonfiction fact and fiction, and it blurs the lines, so it also safeguards me, because as you're reading it, you never know whether I'm lying or whether I'm telling the truth, whether I'm exaggerating or whether I'm being just straight up honest. And that safeguards me so I don't get in trouble with anybody. I can always just say, well, I lied, that was fiction.
Right.
Yeah, so I'm really proud of that.
Nice. How long have you been working on it?
Too long. I mean, I tell my students, you know, I always ask them, who in here procrastinates? And my hand is the first one to go up. You know, I'm the biggest procrastinator in the entire universe. I'd rather go watch Euphoria on, you know, HBO than sit down and struggle with writing, because writing is hard. And I tell my students that, you know, Emily Dickinson, the poet, said that when she writes, she feels like the top of her head has exploded. I'm paraphrasing. And it does feel like that. You know, you sit there and you look at a blank computer screen and you try to get that first line out and you type it and you go, oh, this is just terrible. And you sit there and you type it again. You delete, type, delete, type, delete, type, delete. Then you get up and you go get a cookie and you've already had five cookies. You know, you're just procrastinating and you go call your best friend. Then you text some people. Then you go try to type again. And then and it's a grueling, grueling process. And I'd rather watch Netflix. So I've been working on my book for a long time. And it's time that I, you know, stop procrastinating. And because the writing process is difficult, this may sound melodramatic, but it's lonely because you can't do it with a crowd of people, you know, and you can't laugh at the TV with, you know, your whole family laughing with you. You are alone and you have got to struggle if you're a real perfectionist over every single word, every comma, every creative, figurative, all the figurative language, alliterations, the play with language. And that takes, like Emily Dickinson said, it makes you feel like your head is going to explode after a while. And, you know, I tell my students that it feels like there's a big slimy electric eel in both of your hands where you're just trying to hold the head of the grammar. You're trying to get the grammar and then the tail comes around and knocks you in the face and you're trying to get the good idea and you're just, this eel is just electrifying you and like, ooh. So it's very slippery. You're dealing with a lot when you're writing. Grammar, ideas, beautiful language, creative language, voice, punctuation and syntax, and it's difficult. I call it itchy head. It just makes your head feel like it's itching.
What led you to writing your book? What made you be like, hey, I want to write this book, this memoir?
I think that some of the stories that I tell are important to hear. I cover a lot of topics. I do a lot of race theory. I'm from the South. And I don't exaggerate. Those kind of stories, I don't exaggerate. I had a very difficult time growing up in the South. My family is very liberal, and I'm an activist, and I fought any kind of prejudice, and I paid a price. You know, I lost friends. So that's why I just left the South and didn't quite leave my Southern accent behind the Mason-Dixon line, but left the South and said, I'm going to New York City and I am going to be comfortable in New York City in my skin and in my beliefs. And so I have written about the South in my book. And for any readers out there, that is all true. I would never exaggerate anything like that or make anything up. You know, I've carried my past with me, my Southern heritage, with a lot of guilt, a lot of bitterness, a lot of anger, sadness, sometimes fury. And I write about it. And I let that fury, I let it flow out of the page because, you know, we've made a lot of progress, but we are not there. Not even in New York City.
Yeah.
We're not. So I write about those issues.
Is this your first book?
Yes.
Really? I feel like you look like the type that you might have five books under your belt.
No, so because I procrastinate.
Yeah. Do you have a release date for the book?
I do not.
Okay.
And I'm afraid to make one because I'm afraid I'm going to jinx it and then go home and watch Netflix. So not yet.
Do you have a favorite book?
You know, I start my semesters off the first day where my students interview each other. And one of their questions is, you know, what are your career goals? What is your favorite movie? What's your favorite music? You know, and I list my favorite music and they laugh at me. They can't believe that I like Jay-Z. I'm like, oh, come on. I'm not some, you know, I'm pretty cool. I can be cool, right? And so they talk about, you know, favorite music, Bad Bunny, and they list everything that they love, and Rihanna, and Beyonce, and then I ask them their favorite books, and a lot of them go silent, and they all say, well, we hate to read. We don't have any favorite books, and that's okay, you know, and I tell them my favorite books, and I actually, it's Othello. I stopped teaching Othello when I was teaching at Hunter because I couldn't get through it without crying. I mean, it's just such a, for me, coming from my past and from the South, it's a very, very painful story for me to teach. And there I was, you know, making a total fool out of myself, crying my mascara down my cheeks as I'm reading Othello. And these students are looking at me going, Jesus, what is the matter with this melodramatic teacher? But I do love to teach essays or creative nonfiction or novels or poetry that engage my students in the real world, that bring up issues of the real world, because I am an activist, you know, and I've marched in all the marches. If there's a march, I'm going to go out there and march in it. And so I do like books that inspire my students to really think about the wider world around them. And I call it writing in the real world. We're not just closing the door and writing about literature. They're not English majors. I want them writing and thinking about how they see the real world and how it applies to what we're reading. And so that was a really long-winded way of saying what my favorite books are. But I do teach The Bluest Eye by Toni Morrison, and that is one of my favorite books. And I teach Passing by Nella Larsen, which is now a movie on Netflix. We just watched it in my class. And I love Pride and Prejudice, 19th century women's literature, Jane Eyre. I love Charlotte's Web. I love Catcher in the Rye. I love To Kill a Mockingbird. And Fault in Our Stars. There are just so many books that I love. But I think the greatest writer of all times is Shakespeare.
I love Shakespeare. I don't know. When I was younger, like in high school, I was like, oh, why we got to read Shakespeare? Now, as I go back and I started reading more, I'm like, oh, Shakespeare be spitting.
He takes patience.
He does.
I mean, he's playing so hard with metaphors and words and nuances, and boy, it just morphs all over the place.
I feel like with reading, the way that you are teaching with your readings, I really like that. Because it's like, you know, like you said, not all of the people that are in your class are English majors. And you don't know their background. So letting them read stories from other people's point of view is just giving them a whole different look on the world.
Well, I think reading and writing do go hand in hand. I do tell my students, listen, I'm not trying to make you English majors. I'm not trying to make you, you know, write brilliantly about literature. What I'm trying to do is get you to write in the real world, where you can go out into any class and write a great history paper, right? You can write a good email when you're trying to get a job, a great cover letter for graduate school. Because, you know, I've been on the hiring end, and if there's in a cover letter, in the second paragraph, if there's a grammatical error, I'm not hiring. And so, you know, I really do want my students to become resourceful writers. So, and I remind them about this all the time. Because right now, writing English majors are really powerful. Big businesses want to hire people who are English majors. And that is because writing is fumbling, and that's because of social media, texting, you know, the internet, and, you know, people don't read, and they're reading fast when they're reading. I'm guilty of this too. You know, I'm skimming the surface. I've been taught to just go as fast as you can, faster Wi-Fi, faster sentences. I get an email and it's too long. It's like a whole page long. I'm like, oh, come on. Can't you just write a paragraph? I get antsy. Right. And it's because of we're the Wi-Fi world. Right. And we want things fast. And what it's doing is it's turning our attention spans into little molecules. I mean, we don't have big attention spans. And it's I feel myself when I'm reading now, like, how many more pages is this? And that's sad to me. Right. And it's especially sad to me because, you know, if people aren't reading, then their writing is going to suffer. And writing, here comes another Hallmark cheesy statement, but writing, I'm telling you, is power. It just is. It stands out if you write well. And I tell them that is so important to me, that they understand what they're learning in my class is for the real world. Writing is power. Writing is a good job, you know, and having a sense of voice, an original voice, right, is important out in the real world. And so, yeah, that's important to me that my students know that, that is why they are in my classes.
Are you currently coordinating or participating in any extracurricular activities at Mercy?
Oh my goodness. We are now on Saturday. We are having a group that's going to come together and talk about language and talk about making TikToks and uses of different types of languages. I don't have this whole spiel down, but we are working on that, and it sounds like a really incredible project. I'm learning as I'm going. But I've constantly got my fingers in so many pies here in Manhattan campus. And, I mean, I go to the Accepted Students Days. I go to Welcome the Prospective Student Days. I was leading the LGBTQ+, right? And that was a really lovely group of people and wonderful discussions. And I participate and I make my students, bless their hearts. I'm like, I bribe them with A's. If y'all come down and see this performance with me. We saw Madam C.J. Walker's performance here. It was on Madam C.J. Walker. And, I want my students to know that there are things to do and don't just, run out the elevator door and go take the subway home. Let's do some things together. In any project that goes on at Mercy, we had donut with the deans the other day, and I was like, let's go have donut with the deans. I wanted a donut. And so we did that together. I want to apply for grants to take my students to plays, to movies that are important for my class and that pertain to, like, we saw the movie Passing together, but we could watch that in the classroom. But I'm constantly wanting to involve my students in projects, and I want to be involved with them. It's fun to be with them, outside of the classroom, outside of the, here's how to write a topic sentence and a conclusion, and it's just fun. It's fun sitting in the cafeteria with them and eating Skittles. We eat Skittles. I love Skittles. It's my favorite candy.
I love that you're getting involved with your students. Do you have any other tips or recommendations for our current undergrad students here at Mercy?
Learn to write. It's power. Learn to write well. Take those composition courses and, learn that punctuation. Learn those conjunctions, learn those semicolons, learn those dashes, learn that syntax, learn how to get rid of awkwardly constructed sentences, learn how to quote. It's everything. Writing is in everything except, maybe math or I don't even know what's in math. I can't even add. I don't know my multiplication tables. My students make fun of me.
Thank you so much for being an honored guest on today's show. And thank you, Mavs, for listening in today. Once again, this is Jasmine C. Gordon, and this is Mav Academics.
Thank you for tuning in to today's show, Mav Academics. You can email us at mavcast@mercy.edu. That is mavcast@mercy.edu. With suggestions of whom you would like to hear from and what questions you would like us to ask. Make sure to tune in to our Friday show, Mav Mailbag. If you are interested in helping out in the MathCast shows, please send us an email at mathcast@mercy.edu. That is mavcast@mercy.edu. Hey, Mavs, make sure to tune in to our shows every day of the week. We have Math Life on Mondays. On Math Life, we will be highlighting all campus activities, associations, and events. Math Sports will be on Tuesday. We will be highlighting all of our athletes and sports on campus, including esports. Math Spotlight will be our Wednesday show. In the Math Spotlight, we are highlighting all of our alumni, getting to know them a little better, seeing how they achieve their success and what tips and advice they have for us. The Math Academic Show will be on Thursdays. Get to know our faculty a little bit better. What makes our professors so interesting, intriguing? How did they get their positions? And on Fridays, the Math Mailbag Show, in which we will be highlighting different services throughout the Mercy campuses, and we will be responding to feedback from all of our listeners. Our shows will be available across multiple platforms. The Omni Channel, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Deezer, GeoSavant, iHeart, Amazon Music, and soon to come on the Mercy website. Make sure to tune in.